Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host, Han. Good evening, Han.
Good evening, Jim. How are we doing today?
Not too awful bad, considering. You down there, of course, don't get to realize this, but we have what they call a very interesting weather situation. We're looking to break probably four or five temperature records. Right now we're at 10 degrees in wonderful northwestern Ohio, and they're going to be screaming down to the negative numbers over the next few days. So they're talking about something in the excess of minus 40 to 45 degrees wind chill in northwest Ohio. I mean, this is like Fargo weather. It is just unbelievable.
I've read that the weather in Chicago will be colder than Siberia and the Antarctica, which is like major burr.
Yes, without a doubt.
I'm just glad I'm here.
Yeah, thankfully we have conditioned spaces that we're in, and we're looking forward to spending today's episode, which is going to be an exciting one. We're going to talk about episode number 19, which is I want to buy and remodel this building. Now, we've already talked in a previous episode about the idea of renovating an existing house, a residential structure. Well, tonight's show, we're going to talk about renovating or remodeling a commercial structure, something that is already supposed to be designed or created around the commercial code. But even that, these particular structures or these particular buildings have a bunch of areas that you need to really look into before you make a decision or the leap as to, yes, this is a building I want to buy, and this is a building I want to remodel and turn into a dental practice. So there is, I think, quite a few issues that we're going to talk about, but there's a core list like we had in the residential side that you really got to go down through and make sure you can check them off and be comfortable with that they meet that criteria before you sign on the bottom line. Han and I have always recommended to all of our clients, and we're doing it here as well, that before you commit to purchasing a building, have an evaluation done on that structure. Get a professional, have that professional look at it, make sure that the criteria that are necessary to have in place are there so that you, in fact, are covered in the event that you do move forward on the building. And That criteria is what we're going to use to evaluate. We categorize them as five particular types of structures. The first one we're going to start off with, and we've seen it how many times on over and over and over again, is an existing medical or doctor's office. You want to talk a little bit about that particular structure and how many opportunities there are to succeed and fail?
Well, for medical office or a doctor's office, it has a lot of commonalities with dentist offices. You find it as a condo in a commercial condo development. You find that in a MOB or medical office building. You find it as a small standalone structure. But whatever the case is, it's pretty much a commercial space It's out of the categories of buildings that we're going to talk about. A medical office is probably one of the easier ones to convert into a dental use. But of course, the treatments and examinations and equipment that are usually within a medical or a doctor's office is very light, a lot more simpler than compared to a dental office. The things that I think we kind of touched base on in the last episode, when you look at taking a, like a family doctor office and make it into a dentist office, you say, they got all this office, all this treatment room already or examination room already. Why not just, put a chair in there and off we go. Can you do that? Perhaps. It depends on the size of the treatment room. The circulations within a dental office is different than a medical office. Locations of, sterilizations and things like that are more important than a dental office. So productions and efficiency play a very crucial role. Typically, like Jim says, have a professional, a building or a design professional, look at the space. At least look at the existing structure, system, and all of that stuff. Make sure that the bones are in good condition. But in terms of reusing the building as is, with all the walls and stuff like that intact, you should have a really good look at least do a feasibility study to see what whether something is worth saving or just simply gut the interior and start over. Because sometimes trying to save a couple walls to compromise, to save a few dollars and compromise the best efficiency that you can have in the long term, it will cost you in production and things like that. So, look at the big picture, have it evaluated, have a feasibility study done, which is basically, whoever do the feasibility study. Would look at the and how the code would affect can be addressed pertaining to that structure, and do a preliminary layout just to see how things will fit. Okay, but a medical office building is probably the simplest. I'm assuming that parking and access and all of that stuff are all equal.
And you're exactly right. That goes into the criteria that I like to use. And that first item is, code/easement/zoning. Well, obviously, it's an existing building, but you still have to evaluate to make sure that it fits within the criteria of the code. It fits that you don't have anything in the way of building that are over existing easements. If it's already there, then it might be grandfathered, but if it's not, or if you want to add on, and that's a big one. You got to really know where the existing easements are or the zoning criteria for setbacks, because if you want to add on to a building, which we see happen quite a lot, buy a building, it's not big enough, so let's add on in this area over here, that you have to have the space, you have to have the availability, that it's not encumbered by some easements that would mandate that you wouldn't be able to buy or be able to utilize that square footage and build on it. The use group of a building that's a medical office falls in the same criteria as that of a dentist office. So, as Hans said, that makes logical sense. It's a pretty easy no-brainer. But accessibility, that's another one of the criteria that you need to make sure you check off. Is there really true accessibility? And if there's not, then what's necessary to bring that up to the current accessibility code? Just because it's an existing building and just because it's an existing medical office, once you change it into your space, you have to bring it up to current code, and that includes accessibility code. The big one, which isn't as probably prevalent in a medical doctor's office, for example, is environmental and cleanup. Are there any issues that maybe were in the past and there's some existing environmental stuff. I guess if you had a really, really old building and you're dealing with things like asbestos, that might fall into question. And then the last one, and you touched on it perfectly, Han, has to do with the general layout, existing walls, and what kind of demolition are you going to get involved in? Because just by taking an exam room, which are obviously way too small, you can't just go in and pop a chair in and turn it into an operatory and expect to be efficient. So from the criteria there, you want to make sure that all of those work, and you have, like Hans said, if you do a preliminary layout, you understand what you're going to get yourself into, and also it's very useful. So when you are at the point of negotiating with the existing owner of the building, you can show them these items and say, okay, I'm going to have to put in a handicap ramp over here. I'm going to have to increase the width of this door over here. This hallway is too skinny. It has to be increased for ADA. All of those things help you in your negotiation and hopefully allow you to get that building for a more affordable price as opposed to just blindly paying market rate, for example, what's going on. Well, the next one is kind of like 180 degrees opposite from a medical dental office. And we've seen it a bunch. I know it's been talked about. Hans talked about it before on Demtown. It's taking an existing gas station. Well, a gas station is probably perfect in regards to its location, because they place those in the same kind of location that we always like to say, where all the people are going to be at, by the grocery store, by the bank, by the pharmacy, by this particular area, maybe by the hospital, all within access to the school. All those things that we established in previous episodes about where a perfect location would be for a dental office. Well, that's the same kind of criteria that they look at when they establish a location for a gas station. So a gas station is one that is a little unique. And by the way, I failed to state in the first part of the introduction that please feel free, if you have a question, call in. You can get us at 657-383-1442. Han and I will try to answer your question. And it doesn't have to be a question that's germane to today's topic. We'll gladly listen to whatever you have to say, and we'll fit it in. But back to the gas station criteria. I mean, it could be quite cool. It could be quite exciting to take in a gas station with the big overhead doors, change those into big overhead windows, and really make a very attractive, aesthetically pleasing architectural statement for your new dental office. But let's look at it from a criteria standpoint. You've got your code, easements, and zoning. Again, make sure all of those work. Typically, gas stations aren't that large, so you're going to be more than likely looking at adding on. Is there enough space? Is there enough square footage on your property to be able to put whatever you would like to place on there? Use group is a total different change. So your existing use group doesn't fit. It's commercial, but it doesn't fit within the criteria of what a dental office is. So you're going to have a use group change, which might mean that you have to do some things to the building, including change out or potentially sprinkle the building. There might be some fire rating issues that are required. All those have to be reviewed by your professional, your architectural group that understands that stuff. Accessibility is another. Yeah, go ahead.
Yep, Jim, I think what we're referring to the gas station specifically, gas station of the yesteryears, where you actually can get your car work on and get your gas and things like that. We're not talking the modern day of Thornton and Wawa and and that type of yeah. Okay. We're talking about like a service gas station. where you kick your car.
You know, the cool ones that had the overhead doors and all that kind of good stuff. Yeah, and so accessibility is going to be one. Really, really have to look at that and what's going to be required. Now, the big one, and this will be a big one, is the environmental cleanup. What's actually underground? What's there? Did they properly remove the tanks? Did they properly remove the oil storage and have those been certified? Make sure you get certification as part of your closing documents and as part of your deal. Write it into the offer that you have to have certification that those things are done. If not, and you buy it and you end up finding out that you have to remove a tank or you have to remove some underground issues, that can be ungodly expensive. We're looking at not tens of thousands of dollars. You might be looking at $100,000 or more.
Even if somebody will use the gas station and you get it for free, okay, there's a exorbitant amount of investment in making sure that it's a clean building when you're ready to open your door. You know, Jim is talking about the environmental meaning the site. You know, if the pump had been removed, the underground tanks, if it's still there, that's a cost to get it out and then clean out all the, remove the soil that had been contaminated by years of, of saturated with oil and gas and stuff like that. Now, that's just the site. The building itself is another issue.
Right, because we're talking about gas stations that were probably used as repair facilities. So inside of the gas station itself, inside the repair area, there's more than likely would have been a pit that was normal for back then. In that pit, there was probably a drain at the bottom of it, and that drain probably went to nowhere that was legal. Seen that so many times. So you have to really, really have that evaluated. And there's companies, there's environmental cleanup companies which will come out and make a review and be able to give you a report as to what you're looking at. You know, they'll send down cameras down these pipes and they'll look and see where they go and what's at the end of the line. And if they're actually going to where they need to go or are they going to an area that was kind of buried and all of a sudden you've got this wonderful sludge pit that's buried underneath your building somewhere that needs to be removed and cleaned up.
It's an interesting, animal to tackle. I have seen down here in Clearwater, there's an orthodontist that actually took an older gas station with the with the triangular shaped canopy, so it's more iconic. And and make it into an office, and it is at a location where everybody sees it. Okay, but you don't look at what had been done and acceptable years ago, in compared to today's requirement, regulatory requirement, is day and night. Okay, I myself was involved in a couple of gas station projects. Service station projects, the layout, the floor elevation, the type of equipment and things like that are different. There's changes in elevation of the building. So there's extra cost to make, to make it one level. The slab that since there's service being takes place in the facility, the concrete slab, if it's concrete and not tile, more than likely be saturated with petroleum product, which need to be remediated somehow, whether by chemical and or physical removal of the slab. So there's a little extra, extra cost involved in bringing the building up to the level that it can be used. So just make sure that you go in, have everything looked at, have dollars and cents for everything that need to be addressed, and then you can make the right decision whether to negotiate or to walk. But
exactly.
Then, you know, yeah, I love the old buildings. Don't get me wrong, but you got to look. You got to look at it from a you know, a financial standpoint, not an emotional standpoint.
Right, because it could be the very perfect location, but it's the wrong building. In regards to, you've heard the terminology a money pit. Well, very easily could be turned into a money pit, and you have to be very careful to have this information up front before you sign on the dotted line. Well, the next one is kind of an interesting one because there is actually the statistics that a lot of these buildings become available, and that's called a restaurant. Typically, restaurants are one of the highest failure rates in any commercial building, and a restaurant could very easily be turned into a dental office. Again, it probably falls within the criteria of a location. It checks off all the boxes about being in the right place, having to do with the exposure. More than likely, you're going to have a good amount of parking. Again, check to make sure the code, easements, and zoning are in place and work for what you're trying to accomplish. Now, a restaurant might be big enough. You might, in fact, have enough square footage to do what you need to do without having to add on. And effectively, you might be looking at just an interior remodel, which could be a good thing. Obviously.
Yeah, if the restaurant, if you happen to get a hold of a, let's say, a franchise type of restaurant, they have their own branding, you know, pertain to the architecture and stuff like that, that you may not be allowed to maintain. So when you look at a restaurant, yeah, in general, I think a restaurant, the size of the restaurant should be, in most circumstances, you should be able to fit, should be able to work for a dentist's office. But from rehabbing it into a dentist's office, that may be involved in a a facelift for the exterior as well.
Yeah, accessibility should be in place, but there could be some issues. So that's probably going to be an easier one to check off. Environmental, it could be minor. Environmental cleanup. Well, you're not looking at gas tanks and those kind of things, but you are looking at grease, grease storage tanks and grease receptacles, and also effectively, what does the kitchen area look like, and what are you going to have to do to bring it back to a point where you can start working with it? They tend to be kind of nasty spaces. And if this facility is one that has gone out of business, for whatever the reason might be, it might not have been maintained very well. So it really has to be evaluated. And so that falls into that general demo area. Most restaurants are kind of open in the middle or in one particular area. So maybe you have a cleaner slate to work with on that regard. So there are some real pros and cons to look at existing restaurants as possible locations for dental offices. A lot of those buildings, you know, a lot of the restaurant buildings maybe have a brand or an image, an IHOP, for example, or a McDonald's, or one of the fast food chains, all of which they all look the same. You know, you got the big golden arches that used to be part of the McDonald's franchise. Do those exist, and do they have to be taken down? They would.
If you drive down the road in any small community, you can almost pick out your Howard Johnson restaurant, your old Dunkin' Donuts, the Ponderosa restaurant, the Pizza Hut restaurant. You know, because those buildings are rather iconic, very easily recognized, and things like that. So, you know, it just all depends on the building and what you want to do. But buying a restaurant sometimes also involved in maybe a facelift to the building to make it, to bring it more, you know, to kind of neutralize that old brand that belonged to the former business. But it's not a big, huge investment in that involved in doing that. A lot of time it could be done pretty economical.
And you potentially have the opportunity of grabbing a building that could be a great fit for a dental office, but maybe is not a great fit for somebody else. So when it comes down to the price negotiation on a particular building, you're going to be looking at what is your competitor? What's your competition? Who else is out there trying to buy this building? That equates to what the going price is going to be. So if you can get a facility that doesn't have a whole lot of building or a lot of people looking to buy, you can maybe negotiate the price down a little bit as opposed to having several bidders on your particular property, and then the price gets escalated. So could be a good fit, could be a really good fit if you get the right one in the right location. Well, the next one, we've actually seen several times, and even a couple up here local to us in northwestern Ohio, and that's banks. Typical branch bank is probably in the 2,000 to 4,000 square foot range, ish, and they have a fair amount of parking around them. Obviously, they're in the right location. Typically, they will have the same location criteria as a dental office. They want to be where the people are, by the gas station, by the post office, by the grocery store. So a branch bank might be a good possibility. Now, you've got two things that you're going to have to deal with that are unique to this particular building type than any of the others we talked about. One is the vault. That's a one area. The other is the drive-through. Most all branch banks end up having a drive-through with a pneumatic tube system and a big canopy and all the structure necessary to cover that up. And those pneumatic tubes go more than likely underground. Some of them go overhead, but most likely they do go underground and pop up into the building. So you've got that animal to deal with. And though that aspect has to be integrated into what you're doing, because like for example, a vault. A vault is a large monolith located within your building interior, which more than likely is not going to be in the right place for what you're trying to do. And so what's it going to take to get that thing out of there? Or what's it going to take, or what are you going to lose within that square footage if you have to leave it there and turn it into whatever? Could be a cool application. Architecturally and aesthetically, prop the thing open and use it as part of the lobby. Who knows?
There's a perfect use for this, Jim. Vault is a perfect use, and most dentists will appreciate this, and I hope to hear their laughter. It's a perfect room for the screamers.
I was going to think about the doctor's office. You know, you could have your private office within the vault. Who knows what you could do? You could really be unique and could become a feature if you'd like it to be. But if you want to remove it, that's expensive.
It's costly.
There's a pretty big cost revolved around moving that thing and getting it out of there.
There's a couple issue that's involved with the vault specifically and physically. One is that a lot of time when a bank become vacant and they move on, they don't take out the vault. They don't take out the door. Okay,
they don't take out anything.
They don't take out anything. They might disengage your ATM, but the door itself become an issue to deal with. What I find is that they often remove the lock mechanism and they just leave the door. There's a lot of bank, vault doors are it's a work of art. Okay, the older the bank, the more decorative it is. It's bank is a really cool building. We recently looked at a project a couple of years back that was located in a bank building in Chicago. It's a magnificent looking structure. It dated way back, at the turn of the century with marble columns and stuff like that. But nowadays, the typical structure that you find are your local bank that have been around maybe since the 60s, 70s. One of the things I can say about bank building that is a plus is that they normally don't build bank building to so that you tear it down. They built a bank building with really good quality products. It has a nice a nice present, an upscale look, whether it's brick or stone and things like that. It's not your run-of-the-mill building that you find that are used like for retail facilities. They build it to last, and that's one of the things that. They build with quality because normally when you think of bankers, you think of wingtips and gray suit, right? They want the bank to reflect that kind of image that they are stable, and it's a good, it's a place that you can feel safe about your money. So, I like banks, bank buildings, and Jim say that, all the other things that you associate with it, your drive-through, certainly it's space that you can expand and utilize. It depends on what part of the country you're in. The pneumatic tubes, I think that could you can yank it out. It's not a big deal. Or you can reuse and modify it and maybe put it to good use within your facility. But bank building is a very nice candidate, and you often find them in great location. With a lot of easy to access and a lot of land, it's a good candidate for a conversion to a dentist's office.
Yeah, without a doubt. And actually, if you look at banks, they they're in a good location and a good proximity to everything that's going around. So it does really lend itself to being something that would be a good fit, for example. The next one is historic, and I want Han to talk a little bit about the historic side, and then I'm going to throw in my two cents.
I love historic buildings. Who doesn't? Okay, especially buildings that have been around at the turn of the century. Whether it's a bank building or apartment building, but historic buildings. In this particular case, if we're looking at a historic building to turn into a dentist's office, it would be a smaller type of structure. Okay, it could be a bank building. It could be a library. It could be a post office. So historic is anything that is, I do believe the last time that I dealt with it, is anything that's older than 50 years, okay? There's a number of things that's involved with historic buildings. If you look at it and you say, hey, I can buy a historic building, I can put it on the historic registry, yada, 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 and you're going to have a cool building. Let's step back a little bit, okay? Because we went through this a couple of times, and there is nothing, I'd say, a pain in the butt more than trying to put it on a historical registry. You can take your building and you go through the process. It's time-consuming. It's costly. And the thing that you get at the end of the journey is a plaque to say, congratulations, your building is now a historic building. Okay? with that, you may qualify, then you may apply for a historical grant to convert your building. Again, that's another arduous process, costly process, time-consuming process. And after that, you get, if you're successful at it, you may get $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 or so on, whatever you're qualified to get. But you can't simply say, great, I'm going to take this, I'm going to gut the building, and I'm going to build my dream office. For that money, you will have to adhere to a guideline of what you can and cannot do to your building. Okay, ask me how I know. We went through this recently, roughly a year and a half back, for a historical theater. We went through and looked at how to get the, what kind of grant we can get, historic grant we can get. And by the time that we went through everything, it's say you can't touch the interior, you can't take out the slab, you can't do anything that would diminish the historical value that say that it was a theater. Okay? That means that for the next 5 years, you're going to take that grant money, and you're going to have to basically not build a dentist's office. Okay? That doesn't work for a lot of folks. Historic building can be, if you don't go after, well, in this case, we decided, no way, we can't take that $60,000-$70,000 grant, and that cannot do anything with the building. It just doesn't work. So we kind of basically trash that idea and pursue it with private money and do what we have to do.
Han, back in the mid-80s, I was involved in a firm that was that had an office location out in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Well, if you're familiar with that region of Pennsylvania, it is just loaded with historically active structures that were back then ripe for renovating and obviously taking advantage of the historic tax credit issues that were being made available by the U.S. government. And we did quite a lot of them. And Han, you're exactly correct in saying that they will dictate and mandate so many things. I know for a prime example, I had a facility that was an old hotel in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Really cool little historic town with unbelievable trout stream running through it with some really world-class fly fishing. But we were going to take that facility, and the owner wanted it to redevelop it into high-end apartment facility, apartment units themselves. It was the most expensive proposition that one could believe. As we were going through that project and having the historical review done, a photograph was found of the building that actually showed a very large cupola. This was a four-story structure, and all brick, and on the top of that building was a cupola that was in the photograph. Well, that cupola did not exist when we started the project. When we were done with that project, that cupola was rebuilt, was totally redesigned and rebuilt. And back then, it had a price tag of over $80,000 just for that cupola to be able to be placed on top of that building to bring it back to the historic character. The windows, for example, you can't just go in and tear out the existing windows and put in brand new high efficiency whatever type manufactured windows. No, you took the existing windows, you disassembled them, take them apart, you stripped them, you cleaned them, you repaired them, you then reworked them to integrate insulated glass. You then put them back together, rebuilt them. You then repainted everything, and then you placed those back into the wall so that when you were done from the outside of the building, that window did not have a different profile. It didn't have a different look. It didn't have a different change of any size. The exact size of what it was is what it is. Each one went back into its exact location. This was a laborious process, but the owner was willing to go through it, and it turned out to be, you know, a magnificent facility. But that's what you have to be so careful of when you look at or are looking at a historic project to turn it into your dental office. Oh, sure, great building, old buildings are great buildings, and they're cool, but they proverbially could be the money pit beyond the money pit, which could be a disaster to your particular project if you're not prepared to move forward in that direction. I mean, those old buildings have accessibility issues. You can guarantee it. And how you're going to have to deal with it. There will probably be some environmental issues, specifically asbestos, in dealing with that. And your general demolition is going to be a large item. So just be so careful. The other problem is 9 times out of 10, a historic structure is not a one-story structure. It's mostly going to be a multi-story structure. And then, you know, what are you doing? Are you actually creating a dental office that is in a 2 or 3 story structure? And, you know, how's that going to work, and how's that going to flow, and how's that going to function efficiently? And make them, but it'd be cool to be in a, you know, a 1700 building that is located in a historic downtown, but you still have to make it work. It still has to function. And talk about getting staff that are quite upset at you if they've got to run up and down flights of stairs every day. Not the most enjoyable work environment, let alone one that's ultra efficient.
You were going to say, Jim, those that we had been exposed to. You actually, the one in Lancaster you're talking about.
I was surprised.
I was surprised that they let you actually replace the glass with insulated units. Yeah. Remember when we did?
Right.
When we did the work in St. Clair, in Toledo, you have to take the window out, repair the existing frame and make sure that the weight and the counterweight, everything work. You replace with the same glass. I mean, you basically repair the so that it's functional, and but those windows are, it's like a sieve. You know, you sit at the window and you're going to have to put on a coat in the winter because it's, the cold air just goes right through the glass.
This particular project, we were fortunate enough that the window mullions and the sash sizes were big enough that we could actually integrate insulated glass replacement inside of the existing wood frames system. So it allowed us that opportunity. A lot of times you don't have that opportunity, and all you can replace back with is a regular single thickness of glass. And then you have to look at some kind of second layer of glass that's internal to be able to try to at least make those windows a little bit more efficient, but you'll never get as efficient as the high efficiency.
Like an internal storm window?
Yeah, like an internal storm window, yes. There's a ton of different ways of doing it, And depending on what level of preservation you're required to do in working with the preservationist, you can get those kind of things accomplished. But you're right. They may get to the point where they say, no, you have to replace it with a single pane of glass. You replace it with a single pane of glass, I mean, that's going to be a pretty a costly unit to be able to keep on a cold winter day, like, you know, minus 40.
You just get killed with just the heating bill, or the heating and cooling. Jim touched base on some of the items that I find are very indicative of historic buildings. Okay, you have a lot of structural limitation too. You have support that are closer. The span of your floor and ceiling member are a little bit shorter. It's compartmentized. So to even open up the building or the floor plate so that you can have an efficient layout for a dentist's office, it could be very costly. So when you look at buildings that are considered historic, do look with both eyes open, because if it costs you, 50% or 100% more than the traditional, construction or renovation, it's a hard pill to swallow. Okay, but again, I myself, and I think Jim as well, because most of the architectural type enjoy and really treasure old buildings. Probably until we have to spend our own money to rehab it. Okay, but the workmanship are fantastic. The design are just awesome. It's just back in that era where people, craftsmen and artisans really care about the work. They want to leave a legacy. Nowadays, the mindset is make it quick, make it cheap, and get it up, and worry about it later. So historic building could be a very interesting, but potentially costly if you don't do your due diligence.
Without a doubt. Obviously, there are tons of other building types that are out there, but we felt that these five types that we've talked about kind of hit the gamut of the majority of what's available and what you might run into. I mean, you could look at, I've got an existing warehouse. I've got the possibility of getting I did look at one, which was a car wash. All of those things are very possible. But again, you could use the same criteria to evaluate every one of those and see if they make sense. A grocery store, there's another one. Obviously, I don't think you'd probably run into the issue of size unless you're using a little small mom-and-pop grocery store. But, a large grocery store might be carved up into a whole bunch of spaces, and it might be an opportunity to theoretically put a pretty cool dental office into that. So, there are a lot of other building types. Use this criteria to evaluate, make sure they work, have a professional review these things on a individual basis, be it us or anyone else, to be able to really understand what you're getting yourself into, so you can use that information when you actually do negotiate the price if you want to move forward. And, it could be a win-win. It could be a win that you get the opportunity to reutilize an existing structure. You could have a great location, and you end up having a magnificent rebirth into a new dental facility. With that, we've got a – go ahead.
Jim, what we have spoke about, you know, so far is looking at a location with an existing building that you want to rehab, renovate, add on, and so on, and convert into, you know, a dentist's office. Now, again, you have to look at each individual situation and, you know, and ascertain what will be best, okay? Sometimes it's, if you have enough land, you know, or property that comes with the building, one of your options may simply be, maybe I can build a wing that's used for specifically for clinical use. I think we touched base on that somewhat during the last episode. For it was involved in a house, you know. So you can build, you can design a clinical wing and use the existing structure for your administrative and staff use and stuff like that. Or you can simply bulldoze the building and build a brand new building located on the site, you know, at a different location on a site that may give you a greater access, a greater visibility, and so on. So again, that would be a different topic, but certainly it's an option.
Now be okay. Very careful on the idea that, well, my fallback is I can bulldoze. Like we talked about in the residential episode, if you bulldoze something, there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to rebuild on that same exact footprint because of criteria number one having to do with the code, the easements, and zoning. If your easements and zoning have changed and your setbacks have been adjusted, you may have a smaller footprint available to you as opposed to rebuilding, utilizing the existing footprint, which they can't. The zoning folks cannot make you follow the new right-of-way lines or the setback lines if your building was put in place before they were implemented. So you got to make sure that you have that clearly identified before you make that determination that, yeah, we're just going to buy that property. We don't care about the building. What we care about is the property and its location. Make sure you have all those ducks in a row that you're able to rebuild what you're trying to accomplish. So will a 5,000 square foot facility that you want to build, for example, be able to be built on that piece of property? But you're right. It might be a matter of, now, it's not a good idea to remodel. It's a good idea to push it down and move forward with a new build. Well, with that, Han, let's talk a little bit in a few minutes we have to deal with the one topic we were talking about from Dental Town last week.
Yeah, this topic kind of blends in with the rest of what we're talking about, all the other building type. If you're you're considering buying a practice, in this case it was a lease space, and the discussion was that the you know, the landlord mandate that the new owner, bring the front entrance up to current code. We don't get, you know, for us, the topic is not to get into the negotiation of who pay for what. When somebody say that you have to, or when the topic is brought up that something got to be updated, an existing building that had been in practice, had been in, you know, been used continuously, and they just simply gonna just change hand, and somebody mandated that it has to be changed. The only thing, there's only a couple scenario where I encounter that that is a must do. In some state, if you selling a real estate to a new buyer, the city require that you bring everything up to code before you change hands. Okay, which will be great for the buyer. The cost may cost you a bit more because the owner and dump some money into it to bring everything to current. All right. If that's not the scenario, then what triggered that requirement? Was there something that had been that outstanding, citation, and so on that need to be done? Now we did a project a couple of years back. It's a retail space. It was a bicycle shop and converted into a dentist's office. And the only sticking point was that the city wanted to have the front entrance restriped, the parking space, the handicapped parking space located, and the curb to the front door be cut to meet ADA requirement. Now, the tenant, our client, leased the retail space, okay? Everything outside of that retail space, the parking and all that stuff, belonged to the landlord. So it was one of those things where, we pushed the landlord to bring it up to date and fix that, based on this what the city needs. Otherwise, the tenant, the tenant cannot open his business until that's fixed. So if there's anything that have to do with ADA, it could be the front entrance. Now, if a building's been built, I do believe after 1989 or 91, roughly around that time is when ADA become effective. It is very common that all commercial building, the front entrance and the back door are 3 foot wide. That's the minimum. That's a common standard that you can expect. 3 foot wide, 7 foot high. Okay? If the door is not, the detail was lacking for us to determine what exactly is the ADA update or requirement. So we can only can do some guesstimating of what it is. But typically a door, an existing door of a commercial office or commercial businesses are 3 foot wide. In the direction that it swings, it depends on the occupant load. In general, a dentist's office usually are less than 5,000 square feet. I know it's a common sense thing that the door open in the direction of travel, but technically the code does enforce you to, if it's under 5,000 square feet or under 50 occupant, in the building. So the ADA thing could be anything from a curb, a railing, it could be a threshold, it could be a stoop, but ADA is a pretty much it's one of those things that could be a Pandora box. If you're looking at buying an existing practice where something need to be updated to meet the ADA regulations, make sure that you have somebody that's knowledgeable about that to go through the entire space and identify all the things that need to be updated, or at least dig into, do your due diligence and find out why is that even an issue. Because you're not changing the use of the occupant, the use group. So therefore it should be grandfathered. But if it's mandated by somebody, that is a red flag, you should take and check it out. All right? It's nothing to, it's not a deal breaker if it's minor stuff, but you should at least identify what it is that's the specific, because if you don't know and you buy it, it could be like you need a ramp to the front door, okay? And that ramp, because you don't have enough land or real estate to place that ramp in, it could be $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. It just all depends. Check it out. Get the detail, because in this case, the devil's in the detail. That's it, Jim.
Yeah, you're exactly correct. You got to be so careful. Well, obviously, there's a lot of unique individual aspects about a particular property. Like Han was saying, you need make sure that at least you have a professional do a review, understand what you're getting yourself into and what the ramifications might be before you sign on the bottom line. Hope this has been helpful. We know that we're always excited about being able to share this information. Our next show will not be on February 5th. We have the State of the Union, so we're going to postpone that show, and we're going to move our next show to Tuesday, February 12th. So on Tuesday, we're going to have another exciting topic to talk about, and obviously we look forward to spending and sharing some time with you again. To the folks that are going to be dealing with the inclement weather for the next 4 or 5 days, keep warm. We hope everyone is safe and we can all get through this and look forward to, well, don't they say spring's coming pretty quickly? Can't come
soon
enough.
It's here. It's here.
Yeah.
It's
well,
here.
It's down there, but it's not up here.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to get further north and as soon as possible. So with that, again, thank you. Look forward to our time coming up on the 12th. On.
And thank you for tuning in and listening to us. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.